Guys, we have a lot to talk about. We have a lot to talk about, and as I check the calendar, it is Tuesday, May 13th, 2025. And college football never stops. I'm certainly not complaining about that because this is a college football show. We talk about college football year-round. But for some people who cover the sport, I really struggle to understand how they believe in taking time for vacation, because it seems like we can't go anywhere without some sort of news breaking or something big happening in college football. And we just wrapped up the spring. And as I look at my show outline here, there is a lot to talk about, and we're going to go ahead and just dive right in. No time wasted here on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Welcome into the show on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, across the Game, Nashville Sports Network. We have a lot of great podcasts going on, and if you haven't subscribed to The Game Nashville yet, you're missing out, because it is over there where you will find every episode of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And also, if you haven't already, please follow me on the socials. I'm on Twitter or X, whatever you happen to call it nowadays. And I'm also on Instagram at Parker_Kelly10. Without further ado, let's get into it. The playoff is gaining some traction to potentially expand. I have seen the reports. I'm going to lead off the show with that. I'm also going to get into my post-spring top 25, as promised. That could be a 30-minute segment in itself, but I'm going to kind of buzz right through that briefly, but explain why I have each team ranked where I have them. And I'm also going to start a new segment just until we get to the regular season. I did this on the last show where I previewed LSU in 2025, and I'm going to run with the idea. I'm going to preview one team each show, and tonight the team that I will be previewing is, well, I'll save that for the end just so you listen. But let's go ahead and get into it. So I have seen the reports that the college football playoff is gaining traction to expand to a 16-team playoff. Now, the report I saw was originally reported by On3. I also saw that Pete Thamel had a report that the 16-team playoff is gaining traction. We all knew this was coming. It doesn't really take a rocket scientist. It doesn't really take a lot of forward thinking to have foreseen that this was going to happen, because we went from the BCS, which was a two-team national championship, to, okay, now we have the four-team, and then this past season we see the 12-team playoff, but then there were reports coming out that they're thinking about maybe expanding to 14 in 2026, or maybe even 16, which is the latest report that we have. It really does not take a rocket scientist, and let me tell you why. The people that are running this sport, as it is currently constructed, are in it for a couple of different reasons, but most of those reasons revolve around making their pockets a little bit deeper. Now, this is no slight on college football, because, as you know, college football is the greatest sport on the face of the earth. What I have the issue with is the people that are running it. When the college football playoff was first introduced as the four team, a lot of people were excited about it. I actually was excited about the four team playoff just because it was new. But as the playoff continued to be played out, and eventually we got the 12 team, I quickly came to realize that, yeah, they may slap the college football playoff sticker on the jersey, and they may, you know, promote it, who's in, and you know, different things like that. But ultimately, what the people who are running, what they ultimately care about is the money. So, again, it didn't take a lot of foresight to know that this was coming. But from what On3 and what Pete Thamel's report said, as far as the format is concerned, the bids would go like this. Four SEC teams, four Big Ten teams, two ACC, two Big 12, one group of six. And I say group of six because you have your group of five. And then also you got to factor in that if Notre Dame happens to get in, that'll steal an auto bid, which in this 16-team format, there would be three at-large bids. Did I say auto bid? I meant at-large for Notre Dame. So if Notre Dame were to get in, they would get one of the at-large bids, which leaves two remaining. And as we've talked about in previous shows, and what we do know, is the Big Ten and the SEC are going to take control of what the college football playoff format will look like in 2026. There have been meetings about potentially altering the playoff format for the 2025 season, but ultimately nothing has been changed. And to be honest, I don't really see anything changing in 2025. The major changes will come in 2026. Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the SEC and the Big Ten respectively, are going to want what is best for their current conferences, just as any other power conference commissioner would want. I don't think it's out of the ordinary to say that, hey, the SEC commissioner wants what's best for the SEC. Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, arguably two of the most powerful people in the sport. That's why we're going to see four SEC and four Big Ten teams get auto bids into this new playoff format. And also, I think another interesting twist to this, instead of a conference championship weekend like we're used to seeing, this new 16-team format would have a Big Ten and an SEC. They would have play-in games. So your third versus sixth team in the SEC would play each other for one spot in that auto bid, and then your fourth and your fifth team would face off for that last auto bid. So what they're trying to do by this is place an importance on the regular season by not just giving an auto bid to your conference champion, but they're trying to expand the field to where more teams from a conference actually have a chance at making it in this playoff. Let me be clear. In my ideal utopian world, we would not have this format. We would not have this 16-team format. We wouldn't even have the 12-team format. But as far as where we are in this college football world, there's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. We can't work retroactively. Now that we have the 12-team format, I don't think that we could go back. Same thing with conference realignment and seeing teams like Oregon, USC, UCLA, Washington in the Big Ten, Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC, Colorado, Utah, Arizona State, Arizona all in the Big 12. All the shifting that has gone around as far as conference realignment is concerned, I don't know how much of that will ever go back to normal. Who knows what's going to happen with the Pac-12? I know that they have got a couple of teams from the Mountain West that are going to come in the conference, but there's no working retroactively. NIL is here. The transfer portal's here. Yeah, there can be rules and regulations to kind of fix it, but ultimately, it's here. You may not like it. I may not like it. I may not like some of the things surrounding it. But all we can do is work to make it a better system, because there's no working retroactively. So with that being said, yeah, I may not like that we're talking about expanding to 16 teams. However, I'm going to be an optimist here. I believe the 16-team format actually has a chance at being better than the current 12-team format. And here's why. There is a clear gap between the SEC and the Big Ten, as we've talked about, as comes to a surprise to absolutely nobody who's listening. If you're getting more quality teams in the playoff, theoretically, that should increase the level of competition in the playoff, which is what a lot of you are clamoring for. Because I see a lot of people say online, I hear a lot of people say, what's so hard about just putting the best 12 teams in? What's so hard about putting the best 16 in? If we're getting four teams from the SEC, we're getting four teams from the Big Ten, and less teams from the Big 12 and the ACC and the Group of Five and whatever, isn't that increasing the level of competition in the playoff format, if the SEC and the Big Ten are that much superior to everybody else? Theoretically, it does. And to be honest, I'm kind of interested to see how this instead of the championship weekend, I'm kind of interested to see how this 3-6, 4-5 play-in style works. Again, I'm not happy about it. I liked things the way that they were before all this was introduced. But again, there's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. So as much as you may not like it, as much as I may not like it, and we kind of have to grit our teeth and clench our fists and white-knuckle this thing through, there are things that can be put in place to make this better. Now here's what I will say. I'm going to stand on my stance that there will never be 16 teams capable of winning a national championship in a given year. I'm going to go as far as to say there will never be 12 teams capable of winning the national championship in a given year, because the gap is just too big between your really elite teams in a given year and your great teams. But as far as quality of competition, I think this is better than the current format, this 16-team format. I think it'll be straight seeding as well, which is another thing that a lot of people have clamored for. You don't necessarily have the same auto-buy structure that you'll have in this 16-team format as you did in the 12, meaning if Boise State wins the Mountain West, or if Arizona State wins the Big 12, they won't automatically get that first-round bye. Because you think Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti would be happy with an Arizona State getting a first-round bye over a team like Ole Miss or Alabama? Or do you think Tony Petitti would be happy with a Boise State getting a first-round bye over a team like Michigan or Penn State or Ohio State or somebody like that, or Oregon? I don't think so, because we got to remember that they are very powerful in the world of college football, and they're going to be controlling the format in 2026. Things are going to look a lot different. That is a year to have circled on your calendar. We'll have to see where that goes, but that really, it leads me into my next point, is I've seen the reports too that the SEC has been approached by ESPN, the main TV rights holder for the SEC. ESPN approached the SEC and was like, hey, if you play 9 conference games in a regular season, we'll pay you a little bit more money. As it stands right now, the SEC plays an 8-game conference schedule, meaning they play 8 SEC opponents each season. That has been quite a source of contention among the college football community. But ESPN came up to SEC and said, hey, you play nine conference games, we'll give you a little bit more money. Again, there's been a lot of controversy surrounding this. A lot of you believe the SEC should play nine conference games. A lot of you believe that what's wrong if the SEC plays eight? I'm with you. I understand. After all, I am a fan just like you. I would love to see the SEC play nine conference games in a regular season because it's more quality football. Because the SEC is fun to watch. And there's a lot of depth in the conference. So if we're getting nine conference games, more SEC versus SEC teams each Saturday, that's more attractive to the viewer, to the average fan. However, there is a however. As of right now, I don't think the SEC should play nine conference games. Some of you listening are probably thinking to yourself, well, Parker, aren't you contradicting yourself? You just said that you want to see the SEC play a nine conference game schedule. But then, in the same breath, you said, but I don't think they should as of right now. Yes, I did. Here's why. Here's why I say that. What's the SEC's incentive to play a nine-game conference schedule right now, other than the fact that ESPN has come along and offered them a couple extra, or I'm not sure the exact number. I've seen reports. I'm not sure the exact number. But overall, what ESPN offered the SEC, I don't think it is life-changing money. But what is the SEC's incentive right now to play a nine-game conference schedule? Greg Sankey's goal, after all, is to get as many teams from the SEC into that 12-team college football playoff. We just saw an example last season of Indiana. This is no slight to the Hoosiers because it was one of the greatest stories to watch in college football last year. Some may say the greatest. And they got in the college football playoff with an 11-1 record despite having a very weak strength of schedule. But what did the committee value when it came to Indiana? They valued the strength of record. They saw the 11-1 and got Indiana an at-large bid into the playoff. Now, I'm not here to argue whether Indiana should or should not have been in the 12-team playoff. I personally believe that they should have been. But the committee did look at the 11-1 record, and they got put in the playoff. So Greg Sankey happens to see that, okay, Indiana, they played a weaker schedule, but they were still able to get into the playoff because they had 11 wins. So he's looking at that, and he's thinking to himself, why would I make the path to the playoff more difficult for the teams in my conference by adding an extra conference game when I could just keep the current format playing eight conference games and throw four cupcakes in there and get more teams into the college football playoff? That's his thinking. That's Greg Sankey's thinking. Because if the committee didn't value the record instead of the other things like strength of schedule, why didn't a 9-3 Ole Miss get in? Or a 9-3 Bama? Or even a 10-2 Miami? Why didn't those teams get in over an Indiana? It's because that 11-1 record for Indiana. So that's kind of Greg Sankey's thinking behind all of this. Now, if we are in fact going to a 16-team format and the SEC is automatically guaranteed that they're going to get four teams in the college football playoff, then that's when I believe the SEC will go to a nine-game conference schedule, which would be exciting for you and I, who are fans of college football. Because if the SEC is automatically guaranteed to get four teams in, then they can go to a nine-game conference schedule, and it wouldn't even matter because they're still going to get four teams in regardless. And they may even, if it expands to 16, which it most likely is, they may find a way to get maybe six teams from the SEC in that 16-team format. And also, the SEC and the Big Ten kind of formed a partnership where in this model that we're projected to get in 2026, that would set up a scheduling agreement between the SEC and the Big Ten. So we'll start seeing more matchups like Michigan-Alabama or an Ohio State-Texas or an Oklahoma-Penn State or whatever. The list goes on and on. We'd start seeing more matchups like that take place in the regular season, which would make the regular season more exciting because there's more high-quality games. That is another reason why I think that this 16-team format could be better than the one that we currently have. But there are still a lot of other things that I would like to fix about the way that the calendar is set up. I'd like to be done with the playoff by January 1st. You open the winter transfer portal window, allow kids to, if they want to enter the portal, allow them to enter the portal, be able to find a new school, and at most they miss, 1 to 2 weeks of class? And then, again, this is just my utopian world. That's ideally how I'd like to see the calendar set up regarding that, but I think that is a stretch with the people who are currently making the decisions. All right, now that we have got that out of the way, here's what we're all here for. I know you all are here for my post-spring top 25. As promised, I promised it in the last show. I have done an extensive amount of research on this in preparing this list. Now, I know that when I go through this and when I put it out on Twitter today, that it is going to be met by a bunch of understanding people. There is going to be no backlash whatsoever. Because people, if they happen to disagree, I trust that they will show me their post-spring top 25 and present logical information to counter what I have in my post-spring top 25. If you can't tell in my voice, I'm being sarcastic. I don't think that's actually going to happen. I think people are going to see my list, and there are going to be debates. People are going to come at me, and that's okay. Because this is all subject to change, because something could happen, an injury could happen, God forbid, in the fall, and this could be derailed. And after all, it's only May. So without further ado, here is PK's post-spring top 25. And I'm going to start 1 through 25. So I'll start with the number one team on my post-spring top 25. And that is Penn State. I've talked a lot about Penn State. They have followed a similar formula to what Michigan did in 2023, to what Ohio State did last year, and that is they have a bunch of talented people on the roster who, instead of declaring for the NFL draft, decide to come back to school with one thing in mind, and that is winning a national championship. Key returners for Penn State: Drew Aller at quarterback came back for his senior season. They returned their running back duo from last year in Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton. They returned their center in Nick Dawson. They returned their defensive end in Denai Dennis Sutton. Safety: Zaki Wheatley. Cornerback, A.J. Harris. Those are all really good players for Penn State. And I'm sorry, I meant center Nick Dawkins. That's the name of their center. So I apologize if he happens to be listening to the show. I butchered his name. But their center, Nick Dawkins. Now, what has been known about Penn State? Penn State wins all of the games that they're favored and supposed to win, but they always lose those really big matchups versus like teams like Ohio State, Michigan. I won't even bring up their record under James Franklin against top five teams. So I'm saying all this knowing that Penn State has had an issue getting over the hump. And also, for some reason, Penn State has been allergic to having great wide receiver production in previous seasons. I think that they have addressed that pretty well. They go out and get Trevor Peña from Syracuse, who was a 1,000-yard all-ACC guy last year. They go out and get Devontae Ross from Troy, Kyron Hudson from USC. Those are all really big additions to the wide receiver room. So I'd really like to see how Drew Aller is able to develop chemistry with those three receivers, because in the playoff game versus Notre Dame, they didn't have a single yard gained by a wide receiver in the passing game, which was terrible. That can never happen if you expect to win a national championship. But they go out and they add three guys from the portal to help Drew Aller. I love the addition of Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator that came over from Ohio State. I believe that he's the best defensive coordinator in college football. I am very high on Penn State. I'm really excited to see what they do. So Penn State is my number one team in the country. Number two team is Texas. Now, Steve Sarkisian has Texas running a well-oiled machine. All the hype is going to be surrounding Arch Manning, and I completely understand the hype. He was a very talented prospect coming out of high school. I'm very excited to see Arch Manning play this year. They return running back Quintravian Wisner, linebacker Anthony Hill, defensive end Colin Simmons, Trey Moore, Michael Taft, safety. And here's the thing about Texas, is they recruit at such a high level, and they're able to backfill with guys from the transfer portal in areas of needs. The thing about Texas is they've had really good defensive line play the last two seasons under Steve Sarkisian, but they've also been gutted at the position because those guys have gone off to the NFL. Well, they go out in the portal and they get four guys out of the portal to replace the members of their defensive line that are now in the NFL. So I'm really high on what Texas can do. I believe in Steve Sarkisian. I believe that they've backfilled well. I'm really excited to see what Arch Manning does in his full season, or his first full season as starter. So Texas is my number two team. My number three team, the Clemson Tigers. Did you know that Clemson returns the most production from last season? They returned the most production from last season in 2025. They returned 81% of last year's team. Now, I'm not going to talk about them too much in this segment because I'm spoiling it. I'm going to preview them at the end of the show. They're going to be the team that I preview for 2025. So I'm not going to spoil it entirely, but if you want to hear the rest of why I think Clemson is the third, I have them ranked third, you're going to want to stay till the end. All right, so Clemson's my number three team. Number four, LSU. I previewed them at the end of last week's show. LSU, I'm a big believer in LSU, and also it seems like a prove-it year for LSU, because it seems like when Brian Kelly was there 2 years ago with Jaden Daniels, it seems like they really wasted a Heisman Trophy season from Jaden Daniels because their defense couldn't stop molasses in December. And they go out and they get Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator from Missouri, and he drastically improves that defense. Now there's still a giant step left to take, because the expectation at LSU is to not be an okay defense. It's to be a great defense. So there's still a giant step left to be taken by Blake Baker and that entire defensive staff. But I'm inclined to believe that they're going to do so because I believe in what Blake Baker is teaching. Now, as far as offense, they return Garrett Nussmeier, and they surround him with transfer portal wide receivers. They go out and they get Nick Anderson from Oklahoma. They go get Barrion Brown from Kentucky, and they also return Aaron Anderson. So that's three really good receivers for Garrett Nussmeier to throw to. And as we saw from last year, Garrett Nussmeier is a gunslinger. So I'm really excited to see how he uses those weapons. But again, the run game, is there going to be a run game? Caden Durham is a returning running back. He's a freshman, true freshman last season. He really came on late. If that all clicks, I believe LSU is a legit national championship contender next year. My number five team, Notre Dame. They return one of the most electric players in college football and running back Jeremiah Love. They also return his backup in Jadarian Price. Have some pretty good receivers that are carried over from last season in Jordan Faison and Jaden Greathouse. Now, the big hole in that offense is obviously the quarterback because Riley Leonard is now playing for the Indianapolis Colts. But they bring in a talented freshman, CJ Carr, who is actually the former Michigan coach, Lloyd Carr. That is his grandson. Now, if you remember, there was a little bit of a battle in spring ball between Steve Angeli, who was the backup quarterback last season to Riley Leonard, and CJ Carr. Steve Angeli has since transferred to Syracuse, and now it is CJ Carr's job. So, a lot of people saw Steve Angeli come in for Riley Leonard in the semifinal game versus Penn State, saw him make some pretty big time throws, and thought that he could really be a pretty good quarterback for Notre Dame. But now he's on Syracuse, and it's CJ Carr who won the job. So that tells you what they think of him at Notre Dame. Notre Dame's going to have a pretty good defense next year, and they returned linebacker Drake Bowen and safety Aiden Schuler. They also were able to backfill in the portal as well. Offensive line shouldn't be an issue, and I really believe heavily in the culture that Marcus Freeman has built in South Bend. Moving a little bit quicker, Alabama is my sixth-ranked team in the country. Now, we are not sure who the quarterback is going to be. I believe that it is going to be Ty Simpson, who is a program guy through and through. I'm not going to get into all that on tonight's show because we got to move along. But if you don't know the story of Ty Simpson, I highly suggest that you do a little bit of research on that. Now, Alabama might not have a lot of players that you know right now as it stands on the roster, but they have a lot of former five-star recruits that are just layered throughout their roster, and I believe that they can make some noise this season in the second year under Kalen DeBoer. Now, last year, it was what it was. I don't believe that it was the easiest transition in the world for Kalen DeBoer to come in right away after, you know, Nick Saban retired and just pick up right where he left off. There were a lot of things that were not made public to the national college football community, but Kalen DeBoer is a great coach. And I promise you that in year two, it's Kalen DeBoer's team. And I believe Alabama is a team that can make some noise. All right, moving along. Oregon is my seventh ranked team. Now, obviously, Dillon Gabriel is no longer the quarterback. I believe he's competing with Shedeur Sanders in Cleveland for that quarterback job. But anyways, the expected starter in Eugene is Dante Moore, who had a quick pit stop at UCLA. He's a former five-star quarterback prospect. They haven't officially named him the starter, but it is expected that he's going to be the starter. They bring in running back Mekhi Hughes from Tulane, who's a former 1,000-yard rusher. they went out and they got some offensive linemen from the portal, the most notable being Isaiah World, an offensive tackle from Nevada. And they return one of the better wide receivers in college football in Evan Stewart. That defense, I think, is going to be very solid once again. Linebacker Mateo Uiagalelei, Bryce Betcher, Kingston Lopa. I think this is going to be a really good team. So Oregon is my seventh-ranked team. Ohio State is eighth. Now, the thing about Ohio State is they still have a lot of talent on the roster despite almost setting a record in the NFL draft for having the most guys drafted from a single team ever. They had the most guys drafted this past season with 14. Losing that much production is going to be really hard to replace. But they still have talent on the roster. They have the two best players returning in college football on either side of the ball in Jeremiah Smith at wide receiver and Caleb Downs at safety. The expected starter at quarterback, at least in my mind, is going to be Julian Sain, who's a former five-star quarterback, former Elite 11 MVP. I believe they still have a lot of talent on the roster, but some of it may be unproven. But that doesn't change the fact that there's a bunch of raw talent still on that roster. But again, when you lose that much production, it's really hard to replace. But I think Ohio State is a team that as we get closer and closer to the regular season, I could see me moving them up a few rungs of the ladder. My number nine team, and this is going to come as a shock to a lot of people, but my number nine team is the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, you may look at my list and say, wow, Georgia is really low. Yes, they are. Here's what I think about Georgia. Georgia is like Ohio State. They lost a lot of talent in the NFL draft, but that block G still means a lot, and that's why I'm going to have them in my top 10 because they are Georgia, but they lost a lot of production last year. And also, their numbers last year were not the same numbers that we've seen from previous teams, from previous Georgia teams. Now, Kirby Smart has admitted that last year was the best coaching job that he and his staff had done during their time in Athens. And I totally believe that because if you're looking at the 2024 roster compared to the roster of teams in the 2022-2023, they're not necessarily similar. But yet they still won the SEC championship. So that speaks to the level of coaching staff, the level of that coaching staff in Athens. And they returned quarterback Gunnar Stockton, who I believe can really contribute to a run game that was pretty much non-existent last year for Georgia. Now, the passing game, we still got to see how that's going to play out. They do return Oscar Delp, Lawson Lucky, two tight ends, two versatile tight ends that should help be a safety blanket for Gunnar Stockton. They go out and they get two wide receivers from the portal, and Noah Thomas from Texas A&M and Zachariah Branch from USC. So that should help if they live up to the billing. That should help with the drop issue that Georgia had. Georgia had a lot of drops last year. That's something that they're looking to fix this year. They also go out and they get running back Josh McRae from Illinois to help with the run game. They go out and they get some good defensive players from the portal as well. Georgia is my number nine ranked team. Another surprise, because a lot of you are going to look at this and see a team that was not ranked last year, had five losses, and you're going to see that they're my number 10 team. And you're going to question it. And I have reasoning for it. But my number 10 team is the Florida Gators. DJ Lagway is returning at quarterback. Did you know that DJ Lagway, on throws 20 or more yards down the field, had a 90.2 QBR, which ranked first in the country? Now, not first in the country among freshmen, that's first in the country nationally. And he did that as a true freshman. DJ Lagway is the real deal. And the talent that they have returning on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball and what they were able to do in the portal. Florida has the ability to be top 15 nationally, offensively and defensively. They have the capability of doing that. Now, obviously, I'm aware of their schedule. I'm aware of how tough their schedule is. But we saw a Florida team that Billy Napier was on everyone's hot seat going into last season. And he just shut out the noise. And he just kept showing up to work. And Florida kept showing up and showing up. And I believe that they were one of the hotter teams in the country to end last season. Now, I've mentioned on the podcast before, on the show before, that I don't believe progress is necessarily linear. And I don't believe success necessarily carries over from year to year. But the talent that Florida has, both offensively and defensively, they are top 15 caliber on both offensive and defensive side of the ball. That's why Florida is my number 10 ranked team. Arizona State is going to be at number 11. They returned the second most production in the country at 79%. Obviously, quarterback Sam Leavitt, they returned his top target from last season in Jordan Tyson. Now, obviously, they have a big hole at running back as Cam Scataboo is gone, but I believe that they backfill well. They return running back Kyson Brown, who was the backup to Cam Scataboo last year. I believe they're going to be just fine. I believe Kenny Dillingham is a phenomenal coach, and he's got Arizona State. He's got that program turned around quickly. So I believe Arizona State, that's why they're my number 11 ranked team. Now, I got to keep going through these. Oklahoma's my number 12 team. And much like the Florida Gators, they also have a Hunger Games of a schedule. But they bring in quarterback John Mateer. And they brought over his offensive coordinator from Washington State and Ben Arbuckle. I believe that pairing is going to do wonders. Brent Venables' defense, they were a machine last year. I believe in the Brent Venables' defense. They went out and got running back Jaden Ott from Cal. So if they're able to pair an offense with John Mateer and his former offensive coordinator Ben Arbuckle at Washington State, if they're able to bring those two player and coach over, go out and get a very notable running back from Cal and Jaden Ott, run a Brent Venables-style defense, I believe Oklahoma, as it stands right now, is the number 12 team going in to week one. Now, we're going to have to see how that schedule plays out because, again, it is a Hunger Games schedule, but Oklahoma is my number 12 team. Miami is my 13th ranked team. They bring in Carson Beck, the quarterback from Georgia, to replace Cam Ward, to be the heir to Cam Ward. Carson Beck, now, he did have a down year last year, but Carson Beck is good enough to win you football games. What really cost Miami last year was defense. They have made some staff changes. They go out and they get Corey Heatherman, who's the defensive coordinator from Minnesota. They get him to run the defense. I expect that defense to be much more disciplined this time around. Still have a lot of talent on the roster. But there's been success under Mario Cristobal, and Miami has gotten better. If you look at them year by year, went 5-7 in his first year, all the way up to 7 wins in his next year, and then they got 10 wins, double-digit wins. Now, I believe Miami underperformed last year. I believe they were capable of much more than what they accomplished. But there has been success, or there has been improvement under Mario Cristobal. I believe that there's going to be a lot of pressure on Miami to get it right this year. So that's why Miami is my 13th ranked team. My 14th ranked team is Illinois. They returned 76% of their roster, which is the third most in the country from last year. Quarterback Luke Altmyer is returning. That defense under Brett Bielema is always really strong. Illinois is my 14th ranked team. South Carolina, 15, Lenora Sellers at quarterback. If I had to make a list right now, which I haven't yet, I might do it at some point. Lenora Sellers would be on my list of potential Heisman Trophy candidates. I really believe in Lenore Sellers. That defense was phenomenal last year, especially the defensive line. They returned Dylan Stewart, who was a wrecking ball as a true freshman last year. South Carolina is my 15th ranked team. 16, Texas A&M. Defense was good. I believe Mike Elko, he's been in College Station before. He knows the expectations. He knows that Texas A&M is a sleeping giant. Last season had their ups and their downs. I don't believe that Texas A&M is going to experience many more lows. Now, Texas A&M is let me rephrase how I'm trying to say this. Texas A&M has never hurt for money. Texas A&M is in the heart of Texas and College Station. Football means a lot to the people of Texas. Mike Elko understands that. Mike Elko was the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M before becoming the head coach at Duke, and now he returns to College Station. He understands the pressure that comes with this job, and he understands that he has to get it right. And I believe that he is hired very well. He's staffed very well. Of course, the roster is going to have a lot of talent. Marcel Reed, I'd like to see more from him in the passing game, but I believe that defense is going to be clicking under Mike Elko. Texas A&M is my 16th ranked team. Now, for those of you that have been listening to the podcast, you know how high I am on Texas Tech. Texas Tech is my 17th ranked team going into the season. Texas Tech, the number two, they bring in the number two ranked transfer portal class. They're putting all their chips into the table on 2025. They spent a lot of money on this roster. I couldn't tell you how many single score, single possession games they lost by last season. If they can just flip a couple of those on their head, Texas Tech is a dark horse playoff contender. And if they're in the playoff, it means they're competing for a national championship. I'm not going to go as far to say as Texas Tech, is a dark horse national championship contender, because I don't believe that. But I believe Texas Tech is a legit playoff contender. So Texas Tech is my 17th ranked team. Number 18 is Michigan. The Michigan formula to win over the past couple of seasons has been running the ball and playing really good defense. Now, we don't know exactly who's going to be the quarterback for Michigan. A lot of us believe that it is going to be Bryce Underwood. If they can just get a little bit more production out of the quarterback position than what they had last year, I believe Michigan is definitely a top 20 caliber team. So I have Michigan at 18. My number 19 team is Ole Miss. Now, the reason I have them a little bit lower is I actually believe in Austin Simmons. I really believe the talent that guy has, which is going to be the quarterback for Ole Miss this year. My problem with Ole Miss is they disproportionately recruit out of the portal rather than recruiting a majority of the roster from high school. So it's disproportionate, and I believe that that is a dangerous game. I believe that that is a very dangerous game. So a little bit of unproven talent on Ole Miss, that's why I have them at 19. My number 20 team, Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech returns a big piece at quarterback in Haynes King. Brent Key, if you've ever watched interviews of that guy, that guy is a football, he's a football guy through and through. Brent Key's a really good coach. I mean, we saw what they were able to do versus Georgia. It took them to like 19 overtimes at the end of the regular season last year. I believe that Georgia Tech is trending in the right direction. Returning the quarterback is probably the biggest thing in Haynes King. Brent Key, a really good coach. Georgia Tech is my number 20th team. Iowa State is at 21. Return quarterback Rocco Becht. I believe Matt Campbell's a really good coach. I know that they lost two 1,000-yard receivers last year in Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins. So obviously there's going to be a gaping hole there. But Iowa State returning Rocco Becht, who is a really good quarterback. They played in the Big 12 championship last year. They returned their running back Carson Hansen, Abu Sama the third, both of the 1-2 punch at running back. Defense, I expect to be a lot better this year. Iowa State is my number 21 team. 22, Indiana. Indiana, they go out and they have to replace Curtis Rourke at quarterback. They go and they get quarterback from Cal and Fernando Mendoza, who, according to many draft prospects, or excuse me, draft scouts, they believe that Fernando Mendoza is much more talented than Curtis Rourke. So I'm excited to see how Kurt Cignetti is able to use him. Elijah Surratt and Omar Cooper Jr. return from last year's roster, which are two big pass catchers. The offensive line, I expect to be pretty good. And they go out and they get Pat Coogan, who is the center at Notre Dame. They go out and they get guard Khalil Benson from Colorado. And I'm going to butcher this name, Zen Michaelski from Ohio State. Indiana's backfield really well as it looks on paper. So Indiana is my number 22 team. We got three more teams to go. My 23rd ranked team, the Louisville Cardinals. Jeff Brohm, one of the most underrated coaches in college football. They have taken a transfer portal quarterback, it seems like, the last three seasons. They go out and they get Miller Moss from USC, who had some success last year as a Trojan. Now, I know he got benched in favor of Jaden Mavia, but Miller Moss comes over to Louisville working with Jeff Brohm. I have to see how it works for Louisville. They're going to have a good defense. They had a really good defense the last two seasons, especially that defensive line. They returned their running back, Isaac Brown, who was a true freshman last year. Really good in the ground game. They also returned their backup running back in Duke Watson. Louisville is my 23rd ranked team. Two more. 24 is SMU. We all know the historic run that SMU had last season in route to the ACC championship and then to the first ever 12-team college football playoff. They returned their quarterback, Kevin Jennings. Now, they do have big holes at wide receiver and defensive line, specifically the edge rusher. So that is going to be a big question mark. But SMU is my 24th ranked team. 25, BYU. Now, the reason I have BYU a little lower than I'm sure other people have them is I don't believe that the talent on their roster necessarily compares to the talent of the rosters that are ahead of them. They returned their quarterback in Jake Retzlaff, who, when I watch him play, the way that Retzlaff moves is very similar to Bo Nix in my mind. I really enjoyed watching him play last year at BYU. That defense was very good under Kalani Sitake, who is also a really good college football head coach. That's why I have BYU at 25. Now, there were a couple of teams that I could have included in this top 25. I'll give you my honorable mentions. Kansas State was on there. Tennessee. Iowa. USC. Those were some teams that I was thinking about putting in my top 25, but they're just on the outside looking in. I just couldn't go as far as to put them in my top 25. But that is my official post-spring top 25. Now, real quickly, I want to get into my team preview for this show, for this current episode. The Clemson Tigers, I want to give a 2025 season preview. I mentioned that they returned the most production from last year's team carrying over to this team. They returned 81% of their roster. Biggest wins, returning quarterback Cade Klubnik for his senior season. Clemson could arguably have one of the best wide receiving cores in the country. Bryant Wesco Jr., Antonio Williams, TJ Moore. I would put that wide receiver trio against almost any in college football. Offensive line shouldn't be a concern. They returned their offensive coordinator in Garrett Riley, who that offense really seemed to click, and Clemson really started to heat up, I feel like, as the season ended, if we're forgetting about that South Carolina loss. But and Clemson has legit NFL prospects on all three levels of the defense. Defensive line, linebackers, secondary. Biggest question marks I have for Clemson, who's going to be their main running back? Phil Moffa, last year's leading rusher, is now in the NFL. Their backup, Jay Haynes, tore his ACL in the ACC championship game last year, so he's obviously going to be a question mark. They converted a wide receiver, Adam Randall, to running back. They bring in freshman, and this is a tough name, David Izomumi. And they also bring in a freshman, Gideon Davidson. They'll all get carries for Clemson at running back this year. Davidson was actually the number three rated running back in the 2025 class, according to ESPN. Another question mark I have for Clemson, are they going to be able to stop the run? They ranked next to last in the ACC last season in terms of stopping the run, allowing close to 161 yards per game just on the ground. Now, they went out and they got Tom Allen from Penn State, who was a phenomenal defensive coordinator last season. And Dabo Swinney finally used the portal. He went out and he got three pretty good names, I think, and defensive end Will Helt from Purdue, linebacker Jeremiah Alexander from Alabama, and wide receiver Tristan Smith from Southeast Missouri State. Now, just looking at their 2025 roster, or excuse me, their 2025 schedule, they do have a pretty tough schedule in terms of an ACC schedule. They start off at home versus LSU. They play Troy at home the next week. Week three, they're at Georgia Tech, which I think will be a sneaky, really good game. That's certainly one that I have circled for week three. They're back at home versus Syracuse in week four. Have a bye week. They're at North Carolina, at Boston College. Then they're back at home versus SMU, a rematch of last year's ACC Conference Championship game. They have another bye week. Then they're back at home versus Duke, at home versus Florida State, on the road at Louisville, which is a Friday night game. I think that will be another really good game. Two teams that I have in my post-spring top 25. Have a cupcake game versus Furman, then they're at South Carolina. So not exactly an easy schedule by any stretch of the imagination, but again, they return 81% of last year's roster, which I think will serve them many favors. And also, I saw the news. This is really big news in college football as we get ready to wrap up the show here. But Clemson and Notre Dame, they announced a 12-year scheduling agreement that'll run through 2038. So now Clemson and Notre Dame, which when they've played in previous years, have always been really entertaining matchups. They're going to play each other 12 years in a row through 2038, and that is starting in 2026, I believe. So shout out to Clemson for making this happen with Notre Dame, giving us, the fans, more quality games. And I'd like to see other teams kind of copy this similar format, because I've talked about it on this show. We're no longer getting that home-and-home with Tennessee and Nebraska because plans fell through. But I'd really like to see more games like this. I'd like to see more games between out-of-conference opponents. Now, I know Notre Dame is part of the ACC and the other sports, but I'd really like to see more big-time games between two big-time programs like this sprinkled throughout college football, just to add a little extra oomph to the regular season. I told you, jam-packed show, and it's only May. We have 3 months? June, July, August. Yeah, 3 months. Until college football regular season is upon us. And we're just going to keep this thing rolling. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast at The Game Nashville. You will find each and every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly, as well as our other great podcasts that we're doing here at the station across the Game Nashville Sports Network. And also, please follow me on the socials. I'm at Twitter, at Instagram, at Parker_Kelly10. We'll have another episode. I may have another episode, just depending on how the week goes. I may have another episode for you on Thursday. We'll just have to see how things go. But if not, it'll be within the next week or so. So make sure to be on the lookout for that. Just remember, college football never stops. And for all your college football news, make sure to check us out here on The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And I can't wait to talk to you soon.